Blog Talk Radio.
Pop filter, it's called, to the microphone that I'm speaking in right now, and it somehow made the microphone look even more like a dick, which is hard to do, because for those of you who, probably all of you, have seen one of the YouTube videos at one point or another, you see that the microphone already looks like a dick. So this is going to make me look even more comical. But whatever. I think the sound is going to be just far superior to what it was. Well, I mean, the sound was good, but I was doing some nerdy research, and I found out that when you say peas into a microphone that's like the kind of microphone I have, like the higher quality radio microphone, or I guess in any microphone, when you say any word that starts with a P, you have these things called plosives, which sounds kind of dirty, but it's like it kind of makes a like an airy sound into the microphone, and I wanted to get rid of that. So now I have the world's most dickish microphone ever, and I will be mocked, and I will laugh. As I'm being mocked, I will enjoy reading all the comments. So please, feel free to post away as to how the microphone looks more and more like a dick every day. All right, got a lot of great stuff to talk about, so enough random conversation about dicks. Rand Paul is in trouble. He's in serious trouble in terms of poll numbers, in terms of how disastrous his campaign has been. I'm going to break down an interesting story about that from Mediaite. We'll kick it off with that in just a second. We also have Chris Christie is going to explain everything Obama gets wrong on foreign policy. And surprise, surprise, it's everything. These guys think he does everything wrong. And they think he's some kind of crazy peacenik when, again, we just went over the other day how ridiculous that argument is. I mean, military intervention in 7 countries, and they're like, not enough. We'll also talk about Ben Carson making an ass of himself, Bobby Jindal, blaming everything but guns on the epidemic of mass shootings in America. And I'll give you one more tease here. Oh, the fundamentalists discussing abortion on the Jim Baker show is fucking ridiculous. I honestly felt like I was watching some kind of parody or something. But no, they were serious. They were totally serious. So let's get started, and we'll kick it off here with Rand Paul. Rand Paul is now in serious trouble. He's trying to balance 2 campaigns at the moment. One, of course, is for his Senate seat. The other one is for president. Mediaite reports, quote, an anonymous Republican strategist said of the situation, this presidential dream needs to come to an end. Senate Republicans can't afford to have a competitive race in Kentucky. This rhetoric comes on the heels of more polling data that suggests Paul's national campaign for the GOP nomination is in serious trouble. At home in Kentucky, Paul has missed several appearances that are traditionally attended by the senator. According to the latest polling data from Real Clear Politics, Rand Paul is polling nationally at just 2.3%. That's ahead of only Rick Santorum and Bobby Jindal. Oh, boy. And actually, I'm not sure that's right, because I think Lindsey Graham is polling at about 0%, and George Pataki is polling at about 0% also. But either way, Rand Paul is in trouble. He's in serious trouble, and it appears as if it's too late for any kind of comeback. So that, of course, leads to the conversation, how the fuck did this happen? Now, I was in the camp that I thought Rand Paul would have a decent chance at the nomination. I thought he would do significantly better than his father used to do. And that's actually not true. I mean, Ron Paul came in like second or something in the Iowa caucus one year, and he did a little run at it, and he was totally, you know, left behind by the media. Rand had just a much better opportunity, because he's not 1,000 years old, to do well or possibly even get the nomination, and he blew it. And the reason why he blew it, the most important reason, I should say, or the biggest reason, is he didn't act like himself. He listened to all the different people in his campaign, all of his staffers whispering in his ear, telling him, no, in order to win, you got to run to the right on the social issues, and you got to be strong in the debates, and you got to act like this and act like that. And I mean, it was the opposite of a Bernie Sanders type campaign. In all seriousness, it's also the opposite of like a Donald Trump campaign. If Donald Trump is balls to the wall saying whatever's on his mind, whether we agree or disagree with it, Rand Paul's trying to like poll test everything, and he's trying to be somebody he's not. Remember that first debate when he came out of the box just yelling like a crazy person? At like the first, I don't even know if they had asked him to speak yet, and he just jumps in and he starts yelling at Trump and saying about how, oh, this is the problem, is that you say you're not sure you might run as an independent candidate if you don't get the nomination and blah, blah, blah. And I think everybody, even Rand Paul fans, were like, ooh, dude, what are you doing? This isn't you. You're not somebody who, like, yells and elbows their way in the room. And the thing is, Rand Paul, if he acted like Rand Paul, I still believe he would have had a pretty good shot at the nomination. Now, you might say, Kyle, that's not right because of the GOP base and how they are and this and that. No, but you guys don't get it. The reason why Donald Trump and the reason why Bernie Sanders are doing so well is that, and again, Trump might not actually be in this category, but he's pretending he's in this category. They're running anti-establishment campaigns. And Rand Paul, beforehand, appeared to be the anti-establishment Republican, the only anti-establishment Republican running. Remember, he's the guy who did the stand with Rand on to oppose drone strikes and stuff like that. He's the guy who's just more sane than the other Republicans. He's the guy who on the social issues is libertarian-ish. He's worked with people from across the aisle on drug reform and things like that. And again, you might say, well, Kyle, the Republican base is not going to be responsive to those things. But I totally disagree, because that's when he was more popular. When he was more popular and when people said he had a better chance and when the polls reflected this, he was embracing his identity as that guy. Perhaps not a pure libertarian like his father was, but a libertarian candidate who said, I'm anti-establishment and I'm going to go in there and do the right thing for the American people. And then, of course, once he started running and listening to his staffers and he was being handled behind the scenes, then all of a sudden all of it imploded and he just tanked in the polls. And I think that what happened to Rand Paul is a really good sign here of how politicians are supposed to act in order to do well and what their message is supposed to be. I think people can smell whenever somebody's being disingenuous, whenever somebody's, you know, really not telling you how they really feel, whenever they're trying to play a role as opposed to being themselves. So even if, and that's the point, is that even if you're somebody who has positions that I disagree with you on and other people do, well, if you at least make a genuine argument for it and you try to explain the reasons why you think it's right, people are going to respond to that, man. And it's just true on some level that we're people in elections or you know, the base in election hears what people say, and it's less about the substance of it and more about the feeling they get from the way you say it. A lot of communication is nonverbal, and I don't like that. I'm sure you guys don't like that because we want to focus on the issues themselves, but it is what it is. So, I mean, what you should do is marry together decent policies with a genuine approach and, you know, an honest conversation, an honest talk about where you stand on the things. And Rand Paul did anything but that. So it appears that as of right now, you know, he's done, son. Pack it up. It's over. All right. And imagine, just for a second, imagine not only obviously he drops out of the presidential race, loses that, but also loses his Senate seat. Oh God, that would be so embarrassing. He went at one time from being a very viable candidate to now people are like, yeah, he might lose a Senate seat. Oh my God, you were going to be president, now you're nobody. That can happen, guys. That can fucking happen. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, it's probably more likely, obviously, he loses the presidential race and then he keeps his Senate seat, but you never know, dude. You never know. It's going to be really interesting to watch that. All right, now. We go to Syria. More Syria. I feel like every day we've been covering a story from Syria. President Obama decided to finally shut down one of his most pathetically unsuccessful programs. Slate reports on this, quote, the administration is shutting down the Pentagon's beleaguered and dismally unsuccessful $500 million program to train and equip Syrian rebels to fight against ISIS. The 150 recruits currently in the program will finish their training, and a much smaller center for leaders of opposition groups will be set up in Turkey. A Pentagon official told the New York Times that from now on, the U.S. would focus on supporting groups already fighting ISIS rather than using training to try to manufacture new brigades. They continue the train and equip program, which began a little over a year ago to recruit moderate Syrian rebels for training in neighboring countries, probably should have been seen as a long shot from the start. The U.S. was looking to recruit rebels to fight the Islamic State exclusively rather than Bashar al-Assad's military, which the potential recruits have been battling for years and care much more about defeating. That's very telling, by the way, and we'll come back to that. So recruits were hard to come by. The plan was to train 5,400 fighters by the end of 2015 and 15,000 over the next 3 years, but only a few dozen actually went through the program. Last month, General Lloyd Austin, head of the U.S. Central Command, admitted to Congress that only 4 or 5 U.S.-trained rebels were actually fighting against ISIS. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, those numbers are so sad. I feel like I can go out on the street and recruit more people than they did with millions of dollars in this program and experts working on it. Oh, that's so sad. But see, this is one of the things that I've been trying to point out for the longest time now, which is that the U.S. just arrogantly thinks it can micromanage everything everywhere. It's kind of a classic imperialist power in that sense, where they think whatever action we take is the right action and it'll work out in the long run because we're us. But you're denying facts of reality in your attempt to beat ISIS. And so what they're trying to do is manufacture, their words, not mine, manufacture a third party that will fight in Syria, fight ISIS, and then also fight the Assad regime, topple the Assad regime, and then they fill the power vacuum. And look at that. We have a moderate Sunni government in Syria that's loyal to the United States. That's what these guys were thinking about. But they found out very quickly, oh, wait, the moderate forces don't exist anymore. They don't exist anymore. They fled. They fled to Europe and they fled to Turkey. Now virtually everybody fighting Assad is jihadists. It is what it is. It's ISIS, it's al-Nusra, which is the al-Qaeda branch in the region, and it's other jihadists. The few remaining FSA members are, by and large, radicals as well. And this is what they found. They said, okay, we got to find these moderate rebels, 15,000 of them over X amount of time, and they're like, oh, we got 4. Well, then it was just an absolute failure. And, like I said, we'll come back to this point here where they were talking about how they'd rather focus on Bashar al-Assad's military over the Islamic State. That's the whole point, guys. That's what I've been saying for such a long time now, for over a year now. This is what others have rightly pointed out, which is that how can you possibly make a deal with people and arm people who tell you, I care more about bringing down Assad than I care about defeating ISIS? Now, think whatever you want about Assad's regime. They're no angels. I agree. But when you say, well, ISIS, I would rather align myself with ISIS and fight Assad together. I'd rather do that than fight ISIS alone. Well, then, by definition, you're not moderate. You're radical. Because anybody willing to fight alongside ISIS, that's radical. And unfortunately, our government has shown that they're willing to do that time and time again in terms of attempt to arm jihadists, perhaps not ISIS specifically, but as General Petraeus floated in a meeting not that long ago, we covered the story, it's unbelievable, but he said we should look for, quote, moderate al-Qaeda members to arm them. In the attempts that the al-Qaeda guys will fight ISIS, and then maybe they topple Assad, and maybe we set up a moderate al-Qaeda regime. We changed Syria to al-Qaedistan, and somehow, you know, they're on our side. But hey, you never know. I mean, Saudi Arabia, if there was ever a government that was closest to al-Qaedistan, it was Saudi Arabia. I mean, the government, the people in the government, we know now for sure, a lot of them funded and continue to fund jihadist movements around the world. So, and that's the thinking is, okay, we got one Salafist regime over here that's kind of loyal to us, even though they're not. But hey, we get their oil, we got business relationships, so why don't we try to set up another one in Syria? But that's a terrible idea! That's a terrible idea! We shouldn't even be as close with Saudi Arabia as we are right now. I mean, it's such an unholy alliance. And they want to basically do the same thing here in Syria, but obviously it's backfiring completely. So why not just get out of the region, man? I know it drives people crazy when I say stuff like that, but there's no direct threat against the United States from Syria, whether from the Assad regime or from the rebels. It's just not there. It's not real. So if we're not fighting an imminent self-defense in Syria, what the fuck are we doing? Why are we wasting our tax dollars? It doesn't make any sense to me. And then on top of that, Russia is now bombing jihadists. They're fighting the rebels, whether it's al-Nusra or ISIS. And don't get me wrong, guys. So I saw for the first time the other day, I saw a credible article. I think it was in Newsweek or The Economist, where they said, no, well, Russia also is getting civilians too, so this is a problem. 100% concede that. I see now that they are getting civilians, and that is a problem, and we shouldn't let that slide. We should call that out, and we should say, don't do that. But obviously, somebody should be fighting ISIS. I just don't want the U.S. to do it, because we've been fighting, we've been in one war or another for well over a decade now. And we haven't gotten anywhere, so we're just not very good at this, and there's no imminent threat against us right now, so I don't want to do it. I want somebody else to do it. If Russia wants to take that role and do it efficiently and accurately, well, then by all means, go right ahead, and I don't care. But bottom line is, man, look at how disastrous this has been. And this news comes a week after the other news that we got, where we found that the few people we did arm and train, the second they got into Syria, what did they do? They handed over all their weapons to al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda in Syria. So what are we doing? What are we doing? Is this really the way that we're supposed to play geopolitics here? You know, arm the people who ideologically align with the people who did 9/11, if not are part of the exact same fucking group. That's what we need to do? No, that's not the answer. You know that's not the answer. And a lot of this has to do with not only imperialism, but also with the military-industrial complex and, you know, so many weapons we have and we need to make deals, we need to sell them in order to make more. And it sounds slightly conspiratorial, but the evidence is all there and it's been like this for so long. So stop. Let's just stop. Let's cut ties now, get out of there, and accept that it's got nothing to do with us. And since you don't like either side, why would you pick a side and try to get involved in the fighting? Okay. Now, do one more and then we'll take a break. Chris Christie. Geniuses Sean Hannity and Chris Christie are going to explain everything wrong with Obama's foreign policy. This is interesting.
I'm trying to understand something. Let's imagine today you're president, and Vladimir Putin goes through what he did with the Ukraine, Crimea. Then he goes into Syria, says he's going after ISIS, and his first bombing attack is on the U.S.-backed armed rebels that are trying to dethrone Assad, the dictator. Now, to me, that's almost a proxy attack against us. What's your read on it?
But listen, just when you think it can't get worse, with this administration, it does. So here's what you do. First off, when he went into Ukraine, what I would have done is put the missiles back in Poland and would have made troop movements in all the Baltic states, moved troops there, and made sure he understood that we meant business in Eastern Europe. Secondly, with Syria right now, we should be setting up no-fly zones and protecting those people that were training.
Yeah, but the Russian general went into a U.S. military complex and said, don't fly your airplanes.
Let me tell you.
They're lecturing us.
Listen, if I were president of the United States, that Russian general would not be telling our generals anything. And the fact is that this president has chosen, Sean, inaction over action. Every place around the world, he pulls America back, he retreats, and he apologizes. And that's not who America is. That's not who the American people are, and they're tired of this president.
It's inexplicable to me that he makes all the wrong decisions.
That's such a Sean Hannity thing to say. It's amazing. The Democrats are always wrong about everything ever. And these Republicans are so right about everything ever. This guy really thinks he's like a serious person. Like, well, ooh, big Mr. Political Pundit, political commentator. Republicans are always right. Democrats are always wrong. And I know some idiots out there was like, oh, you guys are the opposite. Democrats are always right. Really? Democrats are always right? Is that something I've ever argued for? Have you seen any secular talk segment? How ridiculous are you? We always call out the fact that both parties are totally corrupt. It's true that one party's worse than the other, for sure. But we go after our party, and we're clear when we do it. He's just like, Obama, he's so wrong about everything ever. Care to go into specifics, bro? You want to do that? No, you can't do that. And Chris Christie said Obama, quote, retreats and apologizes everywhere. Oh, does he really? So what are the 7 countries that we're fighting in right now doing one form or another of military action? Does that count? No, that doesn't count. He somehow retreated from the places we're still in where he's bombing. And he apologized. But he didn't do that. You just made it up. So what about Afghanistan? What about Iraq? What about Syria? What about Pakistan? What about Yemen? What about Somalia? Drone campaign going on there. What about it? No, but see, in Chris Christie's mind, he thinks, well, he's only doing soft imperialism and only doing some drone strikes and airstrikes and whatnot. I like to go all the way. I like to do an all-out invasion and occupy places and stuff like that. Yeah, well, we don't agree with you, Chris. And when I say we, I mean the American people. And the polls prove that. Now, let's get to some of the other claims here. He goes on to say, quote, put me in the ring against Putin. You didn't see it in that clip there, but he goes on to say that. Quote, put me in the ring against Putin. Dude, this isn't a joke. This isn't a game. I mean, look at this. Macho man, yeah, I'd escalate the situation. It'll work out great. We're not marching towards World War III like a bunch of idiots. But that is what you're doing. You don't know it because you're not that bright, but that is what you're doing. I mean, it's shit like this that gets millions of people killed. And then after the fact, people go, how the fuck do we ever let that happen? Because you escalated, then he escalated, then you escalated. And at no point along the way did you guys go, whoa, let's be rational here. Let's sit down. Let's figure this out. And so he's like, yeah, put me in the ring against him. And that's what's going to happen, man. With a guy like Christie in office, we would escalate slowly to World War III. He said, put troops on Putin's border. And what the fuck do you think is going to happen? What is Putin going to say? Ooh, you win. No, then he'll put troops there, and then you're at a fucking standoff, and then what the fuck do you do? I mean, for fuck's sake, imagine that Putin put troops in Cuba and warships there and just left them there. How would we react? We know how we'd react. Because we saw during the Cold War, when the Soviet Union had weapons in Cuba, we almost went to war over it. So imagine they put all warships and, you know, hundreds of thousands of troops in Cuba. How would we react? Oh, what do you mean? We're not going to escalate this further and do something in self-defense. Of course you're going to. And he would do the same thing in self-defense if you put troops on his border in the Baltic states. And don't get me wrong. Am I saying I agree with Vladimir Putin and what he did in Crimea? Fuck no, I'm not. Go watch all my segments on that. But you have to be smart about this, guys. You can't just say, oh, let's escalate too, and let's be tough guys, and nothing could go wrong. Of course something can go wrong. And finally, all of a sudden now, Sean Hannity is defending jihadists. It wasn't that long ago. He spoke about on the issue of Syria probably a year and a half ago, where he said repeatedly, and he was right about this, that at this point, virtually all the rebels are jihadists, all the rebels in Syria. So, you know, what are we doing here, basically? Now he's flipped completely. And now when Vladimir Putin decides to attack the rebels, now all of a sudden, oh, the poor rebels, he's bombing our allies there. That's what he said, our allies there. Why don't you explain who our allies are, Sean? Well, you want to talk about that? Let's talk about that. We covered the Vice News story from a week and a half ago where our allies that we trained to go fight in there, as soon as they got into Syria, they handed over all their weaponry to al-Nusra, which is the al-Qaeda branch in Syria. Don't get me wrong. Wherever Vladimir Putin kills civilians, and I'm sure he has, and I'm sure he'll continue to at times, totally against that in every way, shape, or form. But let's face it, somebody should be fighting ISIS, and if he wants to do the dirty work for us and spend his money and use his bombs, for fuck's sake, go right ahead. Attack jihadists. Obviously, don't attack civilians, limit civilian casualties, the list goes on and on. But yes, I'd rather them do the dirty work. We've been at war for over a decade now. They spent trillions of dollars, literally. Countless Americans have died. Countless civilians on the other side have died. We know we're not really cut out for this. Can we get a break? Can somebody else fight this? And yes, should the people, by and large, that he's targeting, jihadists on the rebel side, are those the right people to target? Fuck yeah. But now all of a sudden, Sean Hannity flips because Vladimir Putin's doing it. So, oh man, the president's got to be big and strong, and the president's got to fight him and do what? What do you want to do? You want to send in our troops to defend the rebels? But I just went over with you how the moderate rebels have been gone for well over a year now. And that's not just me saying it. A Daily Beast article laid that out in great detail, that all the moderates fled to Europe and fled to Turkey. So it scares me to hear guys like this talk about foreign policy, because you realize when you hear them talking, as bad as Obama is with his soft empire and his drone strikes all over the place and stuff, and it's horrendous, don't get me wrong, I'm in no way excusing it, we got to put an end to it. But imagine what it would be like with a President Chris Christie. Oh, my God. Not only would there be more airstrikes, not only would there be more drone strikes, not only would there be more ground invasions, a guy like this could easily escalate us into World War III. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Ben Carson makes an ass of himself. A Republican from Alabama rants against weed, and it's hilariously stupid. And later on, Bristol Palin is angry that kids are getting birth control. Oh, God, you're the last person to ever make that argument. All right, stay right there, guys. All right, we're back, guys. To go back to random microphone talk here for a second, most people in my thing here, what I do, are not a fan of the radio style mic anymore, but I like it, man. I know it's big and goofy and weird, but the sound quality is preferable in my opinion. Or maybe I'm just saying this to rationalize the fact that it looks like there's a dick in front of my face. All right, Ben Carson, there's a lot to break down here in this segment. Let's do it. Ben Carson sat down for an interview on Newsmax TV, and Right Wing Watch has the clip here. Let's take a look.
I don't think most people, if they really stopped and thought about it, would say I'm anti-Christian, but they buy into the PC methodology, and hence they find themselves going with that crowd. I believe that the Congress has a real opportunity now with the recent ruling on gay marriage to come out with some legislation that protects the First Amendment rights of the American people.
But Congress, why do so many people, elected officials, believe that if the Supreme Court says it, that's it? It's done. Even, you know, John Kasich, some of your opponents have said, the Supreme Court said we have to respect it. They don't, and Kasich has been in Congress. I'm not picking on him, sure. But people around the country believe it's the law of the land when the Supreme Court says it. But Congress has a role to play, as you just alluded to.
They do. And I'm not an anarchist. It is the law of the land, but that doesn't mean we can't change it. It doesn't mean that there isn't a reason that we have separation of power and you know, checks and balances. And clearly, when one branch oversteps their boundaries, it's time for the next one to act.
You know, the Christians that have been slaughtered, you alluded to this earlier, by ISIS, and again, an administration that just... I say this on the air all the time. The recent terror attack in Jerusalem, I've heard nothing from the administration. When five rabbis were slaughtered in a Jerusalem synagogue, I heard it was like a... I don't think he's moved by dead Christians or dead Jews. I think he's moved by dead Muslims and dead thugs at the hands of police.
Well, you know, the sad thing is that a lot of people are buying into his way of thinking, and I think it's very dangerous. We need to understand that America is a unique place. You can have an American dream, but is there a dream for any other place? I don't think so. And we shouldn't be so anxious to give it up and to give up all our values and principles for the sake of political
crisis.
You know, nothing annoys me more than idiots on the right talking about political correctness. We've seen Ann Coulter do this. We've now seen Ben Carson do it multiple times where they invoke political correctness to try to shut down their critics, where they say, oh, why are you being so politically correct to attack me for reason X, Y, or Z? And the reality is that across the board, when people on the right are bitching about political correctness, they're saying it to try to get away with something they said that's stupid. So, for example, when Ben Carson said, constitutionally, Muslims can't be president, and I would never advocate for a Muslim being president, and then there was a backlash, he's like, oh, why is everybody being so politically correct? They're not being politically correct. They're pointing out the fact that you're incorrect, that what you said is false, that what you said is not true, that we don't have a religious test for office. Of course a Muslim can become president. And that, you know, your comments, among other comments you've made, yes, that's a genuinely bigoted position when you say something like that. It's got nothing to do with political correctness. If you want to have a conversation about political correctness and the real problem of it, which I do think it's real, then like we did on the segment we did on the show yesterday, I spoke about how some speech codes on college campuses are just ridiculous at this point. It just goes way too far. Police language and try to not hurt anybody's feelings about anything, but even when the thing doesn't hurt anybody's feelings, they change it anyway because they think that's the right thing. So yes, there is a problem with political correctness. Joke outrage. I've never met a joke outrage situation where I'm not on the side of the comedian and against the offended brigade. So that is a problem, but you guys are perverting it because you say stupid shit. And then you say, why are you being so politically correct? Nobody's being politically correct. They're pointing out that you're a dunce, and you are a dunce. And which was he referring to here, actually? He mentioned political correctness in the context of, fuck, I forget what it was in this. but that's irrelevant because we could just move on to the next point here. These guys apparently don't know how the government works. They're arrogant and they're condescending in their tone, but they show clearly that they're clueless about checks and balances. Because Malzberg said it, Carson agreed, like, well, people think when the Supreme Court rules something that that's just the law of the land now. Because it is. How do you not know this? You're a political commentator and you're running for president and you didn't know that? No, it is the case. Have you ever heard me ever say, well, you know, we had McCutcheon, we had Citizens United, that allowed money in politics, but we can just ignore that? No, I never said that. What are we advocating for to change that? A constitutional amendment. That's the only way to change that. These guys don't know that. You heard them say, why doesn't Congress just pass a law to override the Supreme Court? Because that's not how it works, you idiots. You didn't know that. You didn't know that. You're talking about politics. You host a political show, another one's running for president. You didn't know that. See, they're like checks and balances. When the Supreme Court does something we don't like, Congress can override it. No. The checks and balances in that situation were, the laws on the books in Kentucky, which said marriage is only between a man and a woman, and you have the Supreme Court saying, no, gay marriage is actually a constitutional right because we interpret it in the 14th Amendment under equal protection under the law. That's your check and balance. It's not to check and balance it and then do it again and go back to the wrong position. That's not it at all. And you don't know how the system works. And then who doesn't love the American dream point? You know, in America, you can have an American dream. Anywhere else, can you have a dream? No. This goes back to what I've often referred to as a fundamentalist religion of American exceptionalism, where people think, like, no, you don't get it. America is the only place that matters and counts. So what? There's never been anybody in Britain. There's never been anybody in Australia. There's never been anybody in Sweden. There's never been anybody in South Africa. There's never been anybody in, you pick the fucking country, man. There haven't been people that have made a decent life for themselves. Of course there's been. What are you saying, man? I mean, that's so childish. And finally, Steve Malzberg with his normal stupidity. Obama doesn't care about dead Christians or Jews. Yeah, only Muslims are thugs. Notice how he said it, thugs. Yeah, black people, you know how they are, the thugs getting shot by police. Hey, right, it's always a thug that gets shot by police, even when they're unarmed and they didn't do dick. What a jackass he is. No, you clown. Obviously Obama cares about it when people are dying. I mean, look, he just gave this recent speech after the Oregon shooting. The Oregon shooter targeted Christians. We discussed that. So he does care about it. He gave a fucking speech. He doesn't care about dead Jews. He did fucking Iron Dome. He funded Iron Dome, which knocks Hamas rockets right out of the sky. Spare me your nonsense, man. And if anything, it's actually the exact opposite, where if there's any deaths where he might value them, he might value the lives less, it would be Muslims because, you know, that those are the people overseas that we're targeting with our drone campaign, and we often get civilians in sketchy circumstances. So if anything, he's got the situation exactly backwards, which is unsurprising because we're talking about Steve fucking Malzberg. All right, now. Now we go to an interesting story on marijuana. Senator Jeff Sessions is going to rant against marijuana. He is quite upset about President Obama and his administration releasing at least 6,000 nonviolent drug offenders. Let's see what he has to say.
And I really think it needs to be said that the president should never have said smoking marijuana is like smoking cigarettes. Oh, I wish I hadn't done it. That's the kind of message that people hear. And now we have states legalizing it, and they're already talking about recriminalizing it. It's a mistake. We've seen that experiment before. Lives are at stake here. A new head of Drug Enforcement Administration told me recently that 120 people a day are dying of drug overdose in America. How many of them have serious brain injury as a result of those overdoses. How many families, our presiding officer, Dr. Cassidy, been around emergency rooms? How many people are taken to emergency rooms at what great cost to our community? How many lives are disrupted? How many children and broken homes? How many people had to leave their home because one spouse or the other had spent all the family money on drugs to support a habit? How many children have been abandoned, went to bed without food because of addiction in that family? These are serious matters. We made tremendous progress. The murder rate in America dropped by over 50% in the last since 1980, when Ronald Reagan said, "Just say no," and started a war on crime.
Nonsense.
And he appointed me as the United States Attorney in Alabama. I know what we did, and the federal government led the way with tough sentencing, eliminating parole, targeting dangerous drugs in effective ways, and states and local governments followed. I'm worried about it. It's just tragic to me that we're making the same mistakes we made in the 60s and 70s. According to new data, 4.3 million people abuse or are dependent on marijuana. Marijuana is stronger today, several times stronger than the marijuana of the 1960s, and it does impact people adversely. The American Medical Association has issued a report unequivocal on this, about the danger and the ramifications of its use of marijuana.
The only thing unequivocal is your stupidity and your ignorance. This guy's unbelievable, man. He's like a caricature. He's an SNL skit. He gets 4.3 million people abuse marijuana. What does that mean? What were your standards for saying it's abuse? You just made them up? And 4.3 million, because I guarantee you 4.3 million people did not say to anybody, "I can't stop smoking weed. It's horrible. I'm, like, relaxed all the time, and my appetite is good, and it makes me smile. It's terrible. It's so bad." You're just making shit up, man. And I like how at the beginning he says, "Smoking marijuana isn't like smoking cigarettes." I can't believe Obama said that. No, you're right. Smoking marijuana isn't like smoking cigarettes. Smoking marijuana is not nearly as bad. Now, if you don't think that's true, sorry, it's a fact. I mean, the number of people that die from cigarettes is astronomical. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, so you guys can fact check this as I'm talking here, but I think it's something like 400,000 people in the U.S. Every single year, or something to that effect. Incredible, ridiculous numbers, and when you look at it worldwide, it's obviously even worse. Marijuana, that doesn't happen with marijuana. It just doesn't happen. And people say, "Oh, well, but if you smoke it, maybe you get cancer from it." Wrong! There was a study that came out recently which says smoking marijuana actually attacks cancer cells. So it actually helps in that field. Never mind the pain relief aspect of it. Never mind the stress release aspect of it. So it's just a silly thing to say. And I like how he also says lives are at stake here. What the fuck are you talking about? You do know it's physically impossible to overdose on marijuana, right? You do know that, Jeff Sessions, right? He doesn't know it. I guarantee you he doesn't know it. You hear the way he's talking about it. It's so sad how ignorant this guy is. I mean, Dr. Carl Hart, who's an expert on addiction and an expert on drugs, he's probably listening to this with a fucking gun to his head. Like, "Oh, I can't believe we haven't gone anywhere in this debate." Well, actually, that's not fair, because it is true Obama's released some nonviolent drug offenders. Now they're going to release more, and they might shorten some other sentences, so we're getting somewhere. But look at this pathetic backlash. And then also, how many lives are ruined by drugs, is what he says. How many lives are ruined by alcohol? You know that's a drug. You know there are a lot of broken homes over alcohol. You know there are plenty of alcoholics out there. Now, I submit to you, is that a reason to ban alcohol? Of course not. Number one, because of freedom, that thing. Number two, when you ban it, the problems get worse. There's more crime associated with it. You made the mafia more powerful when you banned alcohol and prohibition. It's the same thing now with drug cartels. They're more powerful now because you banned drugs. And the list goes on and on. There's so many, social ills that pop up as a result of banning substances. And we're going through it right now. He said he's concerned about lives being at stake. That's why you should legalize, tax, and regulate. Over 60,000 people died in a literal drug war in Mexico. Literal. So you want to save those lives? No, not those lives. Those don't count. He's just afraid of, you know, all the lives that'll be lost if we legalize drugs, tax, and regulate it, and we're smart about it. But sorry to tell you, buddy, that's not going to fucking happen. We know they decriminalized it in Portugal. Drug use, drug overdoses went down. Everything went down. So, Jeff, you're simply incorrect. And you're not objective in your standards. If you really were so concerned, oh, I just don't like substances, nobody should do substances because I'm an authoritarian prick and I want to control everything about your life, including your mood. If you want to take that position, at least be fucking consistent. Say, let's ban alcohol, let's ban Xanax and all these prescription pills, let's ban coffee and Monster Energy because, oh, it changes your mood, I don't like that. At least be consistent and do that, but you're not going to do that because, again, you're not bright. So you're a victim of your own culture. You've grandfathered alcohol in, even though that's worse than the other drugs. And you say, that one's fine, don't touch that one. But oh my God, weed, marijuana, anything that other people use. Well, ban that. All right, now it's going to bother me till the end of the fucking show, so I'm going to have to look it up. I'm looking up deaths from tobacco per year in America. Please tell me I got it right. I think it's even more than I said. You guys got this or no? CDC fact sheet. More than 16 million Americans are living with a disease caused by smoking. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Cigarette smoking is responsible for more than 480,000 deaths per year in the United States. Good googly moogly! I thought, as I was saying the number, when it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, come on, man, that can't be right. Like, as I was saying it, I was like, you didn't check this fact recently enough. Don't say it. Don't say it. And I said it. And I was like, I might regret that later. Nope. I was under it. Oh, my God. That's fucking ridiculous. But by the way, I know longtime listeners of the show probably already know this, but my dad actually died from smoking in 2011. Young. Yeah, I think he was 56 when he died because he smoked nonstop. Basically a pack a day or two packs a day, roughly. So, that drug is no fucking joke, dude. I told you guys my story, too. I smoked for a while, and then I used the electronic cigarettes, and then I was just too lazy to keep getting the electronic cigarettes. And now I'm cigarette-free, bitch. Although, I'm not going to lie, every once in a while, I do indulge in one of the electronic cigarettes. I like the cherry-flavored one now, because I grew a vagina. So it's really delicious, and every once in a while I'll have that. All right, where am I going with this? Let me do Bobby Jindal and his ridiculousness. You're going to see the pretzel that Republicans twist themselves into to not blame guns for anything. Bobby Jindal is going to talk about the recent Oregon shooting, and he's going to blame everything but guns.
So here you have the father, that mass murderer, blaming it on the guns.
Yeah, I was actually in your hometown. I was in Harlan yesterday when I first said this. Look, let's get politically incorrect. He is now lecturing us on the need for gun control, even as he says he has no idea how his son got the guns. Of course he doesn't know. He was never involved in his son's life. He was a complete failure as a father. He shouldn't be showing his face in public. He's the problem here. He says he never held a gun in his life. He had no idea how his son had any guns. Why didn't he know? He failed to raise his son. He should be ashamed of himself. He should owe us all an apology. When asked about his relationship with his son, he said he hadn't seen him because he lived with his mother. And I made a bigger point. You know, every time we have these awful shootings, the left, Hillary and Obama, they want to take away our Second Amendment rights. They never talk about the moral decay we are seeing in our country. Let's be honest. You look at the cultural rot we have seen all around us. We have 6 senseless acts of violence in every element of our culture, our movies, our TV shows, and our songs. Every type of deviant behavior is awarded. We give awards to these producers. You know, whether it's rape, torture, murder, mass murder, these are all considered cultural achievements. We're promoting evil. We promote the degradation of women. We flaunt laws of God and common decency. We promote it all. We flood our young people with it. You get boys, you know, we tell them they can't bully in school. They come home, they play these graphic video games where, you know, sensational violence. We devalue human life. And finally, and I know that, you know, look, we've already offended all kinds of people. Let me say this. You look at what's happening in our families. We've raised tens of millions of young boys who aren't going to become real men. They don't have values. They have no truth. They have no regard for common decency. And a large part of that reason is they've got no father figure in their lives or broken relationship with their fathers. We need a spiritual revival in this country. So it's what they used to say, garbage in, garbage out. We fill our culture with garbage. Now we're getting to now we're reaping the result. We've got evil in our midst. It's not about taking away law-abiding citizens' gun rights. It really is about going after the cultural decay, the moral rot we see in our society. The left wants to take God out of the public square. We are now reaping the consequences of that.
That's adorable. Look at the mental gymnastics and the pretzel he's twisting himself into. He blamed everything except easy access to guns. Everything. He said absent fathers, moral decay, music videos, movies, video games, lack of religion, and lack of prayer in school. That's hilarious, man. I mean, it's never been more obvious to me that these guys are just totally trying to sidestep the issue. Like, blame anything but that because that's sacrosanct and that's off the table and let's never do anything with guns. Now, understand, guys, I've said before, I'm somebody, I believe in the Second Amendment in the sense that I believe in what it actually says. So they're talking about a well-regulated militia in the Second Amendment, and that means something. So the word regulated is in the Second Amendment. That means something. So you could regulate the guns. And also they're referring to a militia. Are you in a militia? No, you're not in a fucking militia. So they're not talking about an individual's right to a gun. But even saying that, understand that I'm fine with you owning a gun if you're somebody who is a law-abiding citizen, is, you know, doesn't have anything crazy in your past, doesn't have anything on your record that indicates that you might lose it. It's just a matter of what kind of guns, how many guns, what kind of system should we set up, what kind of system should we put in place in order to verify that you are somebody who's responsible enough to have guns. And the point we're at right now is nowhere near sanity. 40% of gun purchases in America have no background check associated with them whatsoever. None. None whatsoever. So that's the gun show loophole. So that means that you can have somebody who's a paranoid schizophrenic. You can have somebody who is severely depressed. You can have somebody who has multiple felonies on their record. They can just go in, buy a gun, and next thing you know, they can use it. I mean, this kid who had serious issues had an arsenal of over a dozen guns who did this last shooting. And Bobby Jindal comes out there, and what does he want to do? Movies, music, prayer in school, something, anything else other than the guns. Well, then you're just wrong. And understand, other nations, here's the main point, other nations have the same or similar music videos and movies and video games, and the cultures are super similar, but they just don't have as easy access to guns, and the statistics reflect that they don't have the same problem we do. We have between 32 and 36,000 gun deaths on average in America every single year. Just for murders, it's between 8,000 and 12,000 every single year, way above and beyond any other modern nation. So to say it's not the guns, you're just putting your head in the sand and you're denying facts. One of the things these guys like to say is, it's always in the gun-free zones that these shootings happen. Really? You want to know what percentage occur in gun-free zones? 13%. So spare me, you're just wrong. And finally, I'll say this. It's hilarious whenever Bobby Jindal starts a sentence by saying, you know, let's be politically incorrect here. That's his way of saying, like, ooh, I'm going to be a truth teller and I'm gonna keep it real. And then he goes on to say, the dumbest shit you've ever heard in your life. You know, prayer in school, that's why we have all these problems. Decaying society, movies and stuff. That's not you being politically incorrect. That's you being incorrect. Drop the politically. You're just incorrect. And then also he's, you know, let's be honest. He says it like he's some sort of straight shooter. Dude, you're the opposite of a straight shooter. You're so pathetic. Every single right-wing cliche and platitude that there is, which has been thoroughly debunked, you say it as if you're the first person who's ever said it, and you say it as if it's brilliant. As Christopher Hitchens one time said to Sean Hannity in a debate, he goes, you know, you give me the terrible misimpression of somebody who's never read any of the counterarguments to your position, or something to that effect. That's what I get from Bobby Jindal. He's so deep in that right-wing bubble that he has no idea how stupid he looks to the rest of us. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, got a bunch of great stuff, including Stephen Hawking making a bold claim about capitalism. And then we also have Bristol Palin freaking out about birth control, which is hilarious. All right, stay right there, guys. we're back. Stephen Hawking. Talk a little bit about him. In a Reddit Ask Me Anything session on Thursday, Stephen Hawking made some fascinating comments about the future of technology and what we should really fear. He said, quote, "If machines produce everything we need, the outcome will depend on how things are distributed. Everyone can enjoy a life of luxurious leisure if the machine-produced wealth is shared, or most people can end up miserably poor if the machine owners successfully lobby against wealth redistribution. So far, the trend seems to be the second option, with technology driving ever-increasing inequality." Yeah, so he rips capitalism here. He actually, I think, goes on to literally bring up the term capitalism and to, you know, rail against it in one way or another, as he's kind of doing right here. And that's a great point that, honestly, I never really thought about it in this way before, the way that he's describing it. So not that long ago, we discussed an article that was in Alternet where they're talking about how the U.S. almost got a 30-hour work week once. It's incredible. In fact, the bill, I think it passed the House of Representatives, but it died in the Senate. It was around the same time they were doing the New Deal, and we dropped that and obviously did different programs instead and did different legislation instead. But in the article, they bring up how William Howard Taft, of all people, a Republican, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times or had a quote that was in the New York Times, and I think it was 1910, and he said every worker should get 3 months off, guaranteed. Every worker. Now, you and I hear that, and we're like, what the fuck? I mean, today, if you were to propose something like that, you'd be labeled a communist, and you'd be dismissed as a kook. Back then, it was a Republican who said that. All right, that's stunning, but his point was, no, we're getting to a point in history where we have the technology, we have the machinery, we have the industries, you know, already in existence, and they already know what they're doing. So why wouldn't we depend on the technology, the machinery, and, you know, the rest of us can enjoy our lives and do essentially whatever we want to do and not make the chase of the almighty dollar be our main focus? That was an argument from William Howard Taft, a Republican from back then. Again, today you can't make that argument and be a liberal without people dismissing you as some sort of kook. Now here we have one of the smartest people that ever lived basically saying the same thing or something very similar, where he's saying, no, this idea that you have to get up, you have to go to work, you have to go through the motions, you have to live in this economic system where our main function is basically being like a machine, basically being property of our owner, scrap all of that. We don't need that. We can imagine and envision a radically different world where we have the technology. So now it's just a matter of what do we do with the wealth that we're creating through the technology? And he's saying, if we have the technology and we don't do redistribution of wealth, that's just dangerous. When you make income inequality worse, but you have the machinery to make us all rich, well, then you're just being a prick. You're just being a greedy bastard who's trying to, in essence, keep down the rest of the population and tell them that even though we have the technology to do the work for us, we're going to make you do some work along with the machinery and pay you not that much, and then you're going to struggle and we're going to take all the material wealth because, hey, capitalism, this is how it works. Oh, you're against it? Oh, are you a terrorist? But again, one of the smartest guys in the world is laying this out, and it makes perfect sense. And again, I never thought of it in this way. See, I'm somebody who's advocated in the past for a 4-day work week, for example, and I'm a social democrat, or I'm more in that camp, which means I don't want to scrap capitalism completely. I believe in a hybrid system of socialism and capitalism, kind of like Scandinavia and a lot of the governments over there. But what he is introducing me to here is, well, what if I were to tell you that we're guaranteed to do wealth creation through technology, and then it's just a matter of how we allocate the resources and what we do with that wealth creation? Why can't we have a system where everybody's guaranteed X amount of money because your machine does X amount of work automatically, so you get X amount of wealth, and then everybody can have a life of leisure or whatever. It's, again, it's a radically different world, and it's hard to wrap your mind around it because our current context is so different. But it's a fascinating thought, and when one of the smartest guys ever is saying, yeah, capitalism is the problem. The problem is the way that we distribute the wealth, even though we can do it better and we choose not to. When he's saying it, well, then that gives me pause and makes me say, shit, we gotta sit down and figure all this out, man. How are we going to move forward from here? Because it does appear like with the technology we have and that we're going to have, we can't have a system that's reliant upon exploitation for that much longer. We have the ability to vastly improve the system and the way it works, but it requires people in power knowing that they can no longer rip us the fuck off, and it requires organization in figuring out exactly how we're going to work it out from here. All right. To some crazy motherfuckers. The fundamentalist Christians on the Jim Baker show spoke about abortion and Planned Parenthood, and they set the Guinness World Record for crazy.
I personally, and I can't prove this, although I've interviewed some people who swear that a few weeks ago I interviewed a former Satanist. He said he performed, I'm trying to think, 146 satanic rituals inside abortion clinics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Rick, absolutely. I mean, I can't prove it because I wasn't there, but let me just say this. For many years, I had a post-abortion ministry, which we're going to start back up at Lori's house, where we bring in the women to heal from the pain and the torment and the torture of them going through abortion. And we do these memorial services and all of this. So, because I believe that the Holy Spirit can heal you in a split second compared to all the counseling in the world. And I will tell you, especially on Halloween, that many, 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 many satanic rituals are, abortion rituals are performed.
That's what he said.
It's the truth.
Sweet Jesus. So at Planned Parenthood, they're not doing reproductive health for people. No, they're engaged in satanic ceremonies and child sacrifice. No, this is lunacy. They also went on in that conversation to say that Planned Parenthood are Nazis, naturally. And they just made up some facts. So they said, I love this one. The number one cause of death is abortion. What does that mean? What does that mean? You always know it's going to be hilarious when a fundamentalist Christian starts off the sentence with, I can't prove this. Because think about it. He's already a fundamentalist Christian, which means there's a very good chance whatever's going to come out of his mouth anyway is horse shit. But then, on top of that, he's like, well, I can't prove this. So you know what's coming is guaranteed to just be a waterfall of pure stupidity. And that's exactly what they hit us with. These guys still have no idea that the Satanists who put up the statues on public lands, that they're trolling them. Glenn Beck still doesn't even know that. We covered that story yesterday. Glenn Beck went on and on. He was almost crying, talking about they took the Ten Commandments down in Oklahoma, but in Detroit they put up the Lucifer statue. Like, these guys really think, like, there's Satanists somewhere. We will make America worship the devil. And guys like Beck and other religious kooks are like, oh, I'm so scared. What if Beelzebub attacks us? They're trolling you, you idiots. They're making a rational point about the double standard when it comes to religion and about separation of church and state, about how you guys love putting up Christian statues, but if an Islamic statue goes up or some sort of Hindu or Buddhist thing goes up, oh my God, we can't have that, but your statue's fine. But we have separation of church and state, so either if you're going to allow any religious statues on public grounds, which you shouldn't, you have to allow anyone that anybody wants, or you just don't put any there. But they still don't get it. They still, oh, Satan statue, people are worshiping Satan. I cannot believe this. Goodness gracious. Did you hear about this Planned Parenthood place? They give out the condoms, and they give out the pill and whatnot, and they're doing satanic rituals and child sacrifice. Did you guys remember this whole smear, bullshit, sting video that came out recently that fact-checkers ripped apart? Did you know that the Planned Parenthood clinic that they were busting, they don't even do late-term abortions there? So we're talking all the abortions there were before viability, before 23 weeks. So, I mean, literally every abortion, not a single one of them had pain with it whatsoever. What, and no taxpayer money went to it either. It was all out of pocket when somebody got an abortion because of the Hyde Amendment and because of the fact that you're not allowed to put federal tax dollars towards abortion. So all this, you know, fucking, oh, child sacrifice, killing people, genocide, infanticide. It's all just nonsense, utter nonsense. If you want to have a logical discussion about where you draw the line with abortion policy and, hey, at what point is it reproductive rights and totally the choice of the woman, and at what point is there a reasonable conversation that maybe the state should take some action because, hey, if it's 3 minutes before the baby's born, you're not going to shove scissors in its head and pull it out. Okay, there is a reasonable conversation to be had there, but you guys are not reasonable. You're calling Planned Parenthood Nazis. You're saying they're doing satanic ceremonies. You said the number one cause of death is abortion. They said some other stupid shit like, one of every two African-American babies is aborted. I'd love to see where all of your statistics come from. Oh, never mind, I wouldn't, because I know where they come from. Your rectum. All right, now, speaking of reproductive health, Bristol Palin. Oh, no. What the fuck is she going to tell us? You're about to see. Bristol Palin wrote a blog freaking out about girls getting birth control. You're the last person who should write that blog, but she decided to write it. I mean, that's like Bill Cosby writing a blog about sexual predators. What's wrong with you? Okay. So this has to be some sort of record for lack of self-awareness. Huffington Post reports, quote, Palin cited a report touted by conservative news sites over the summer about a Washington State high school providing IUDs and hormone implants to students without parental notification or consent. Do you remember what it was like to be a 10-year-old? I remember being an unabashed tomboy concerned with playing outside and acting and acing fifth grade. But life isn't so innocent and carefree for some 10-year-olds in Washington State. It is crazy that the government is offering a controversial form of birth control that can have serious lifelong side effects to 10-year-old children. But then to do all of this behind a parent's back is simply outrageous. Now, what's she really referring to? Well, let me tell you. Quote, Washington, along with 25 other states and the District of Columbia, do not require minors to have parental consent to obtain birth control. That's all she's referring to here. Additionally, research has shown that IUDs are just as safe for teenagers to use as they are for adults, and studies have found any impact on long-term haven't found any impact on long-term fertility. Programs like the ones in Washington State have been immensely successful in preventing teen pregnancy, as the New York Times reported in July. Colorado implemented a 6-year program to distribute free, long-acting, reversible contraceptives to teenagers and young women. From 2009 to 2013, the state birth rate among teens declined 40%, while the teen abortion rate dropped 42%. Oh, I see. So you guys are fucking clueless. This is one of the biggest contradictions in politics, period. It's an amazing contradiction. The guys on the right still have not figured this out. It's baffling that they haven't, because even I don't think they're this stupid. But they try to have their cake and eat it too, so people like Bristol Palin are like, don't do the pill, don't do IUDs, don't do condoms, don't do birth control, don't do free clinics, none of that stuff. You can't do any of that stuff. But along with that, I would like it if the STD rate, and I would like it if the unwanted pregnancy rate and the abortion rate dropped as well. No, you can't have it both ways. It's one or the other. Either you allow all those things, and then you'll have the abortion rate, the STD rate, and everything come down, or you don't allow those things, and it will go up. And what we're talking about here is free birth control for people who need it without having to tell their parents. Okay, that's only the most sensible thing ever, and obviously that's going to decrease the number of unwanted pregnancies, the number of abortions, the number of STDs. Obviously it's going to do that. Obviously it's going to do that. Would you rather people fuck anyway and not have protection? That's what you did, and look at how it ended up. You're ridiculous. You're a ridiculous human being, Bristol Palin. You're ridiculous. You're out there fucking raw dog all day long, having kids you didn't even fucking want to have, and then you're lecturing other people when they're responsible in what they do, and you're acting like they're the irresponsible ones. What are you fucking talking about 10-year-olds? Right, as if a 10-year-old, you know, hints to some authority figure that they're fucking a 35-year-old, everybody's going to go, oh, no, totally cool, go right ahead, no problem with that. That is a complete and utter straw man of what liberals are in favor of and what the programs actually do. They're successful. They work. You're against it because you're a dunce, and you're the last person that can make this argument, clearly, based on what you've done. Okay. God, does hypocrisy just run in the Palin family? Or silliness? All right, let's go to a devastating story out of Japan. The Associated Press is reporting that Fukushima is in trouble. So cancer rates are rising there. Fukushima is, of course, the place in Japan that had a recent nuclear meltdown. They report, quote, a new study says children living near the Fukushima nuclear meltdowns have been diagnosed with thyroid cancer at a rate 20 to 50 times that of children elsewhere, a difference the authors contend undermines the government's position that more cases have been discovered in the area only because of stringent monitoring. Most of the 370,000 children in Fukushima have been given ultrasound checkups since the March 2011 meltdowns at the tsunami-ravaged Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. The most recent statistics released in August show that thyroid cancer is suspected or confirmed in 137 of those children, a number that rose by 25 from a year earlier. Elsewhere, the disease occurs in only about one or two of every million children per year. Okay, so that's the key fact there. That doesn't sound like a lot, right? 137 out of 370,000 children. But what it's supposed to be, the normal amount would be, occurs in one or two kids out of every million. They say Noriko Matsumoto, who's 53 years old, who used to work as a nurse in Fukushima outside the no-go zone, fled to Tokyo with her then 10-year-old daughter a few months after the disaster. She had initially shrugged off the fears, but got worried when her daughter started getting nosebleeds and rashes. Oh. See, this reminds me a lot of the debate around fracking and around all of the work really going on in oil and natural gas. I mean, there's examples in some parts of Canada where this is happening and people are getting sick and they're having to leave their homes. And my main point is don't trust the government on this. You just can't, because they're going to try to calm everybody down. They're going to try to act like there is no problem. They're going to try to keep the peace in that way. But hand in hand with that is the very real problem that everything's not okay. You know, I'm not a scientist, but you clearly don't need to be one to know that a nuclear meltdown is not a fucking good thing. We see what happened with Chernobyl. We see what happened with Three Mile Island. Now, you can argue about the degree and the difference between the different meltdowns based on the degree and how big of a problem it was. That's obvious and that's a given. But they have a certain zone that's a no-go zone, essentially, because of the meltdown. And all I'm saying is if I'm in the first area that's closest to the no-go zone, so the first place where you're allowed to live, closest to Fukushima, I wouldn't be there. I wouldn't be there. And, the government, every step of the way, they were underselling how bad it was. I think they're still doing it now. This is just one example, and, you know, I hate to see the other health effects that I think are almost certainly going to come down the road. Okay, now let's do our last story here. Finish a little early today, most likely. Vladimir Putin. Sweet Jesus. The goofy side of him. Vladimir Putin turned 63 recently, and for his birthday, he decided to play hockey. So he does this every few years. He plays with some of the best retired hockey players in the world, and they always let him win because he's a fucking child. So he scored 7 goals. Now, I would show you the clips from this game, but this game, in all seriousness, they had fewer clips than they usually do whenever he goes and plays hockey. But I do want to show you the clips from last year's hockey game. He probably scored about the same, about 7 goals in the other game as well. So let's take a look, and then we'll discuss. Guys, it's so obvious that you're letting him win. It's so insanely obvious that you're letting him win. That last one, it was so clear. I mean, the whole thing, you could tell they're going easy on him, clearly. But when he scores that last goal, the goalie's looking to the left. And the pass is relatively slow. Putin gets it and shoots it in. But the goalie's like, I actually used to be, in no serious way, but when I was like a kid, I was a hockey goalie. And your reflexes are roughly 8,000 times faster than what that guy did. It's so obvious that they're letting him win. Now, obviously, they slowed it down there a little bit, but even in normal speed, he was going way slower than everybody else because he's not a fucking professional hockey player. You're a dude who's over 60. Now, here's the aspect of this that I adore. To all rational people, if you think about it, this has the exact opposite of the desired effect. So they want to make you think that this is real and he's good at everything, but to thinking people, they go, oh, he's just a dictator trying to puff up his ego and show the world how great he is, but it just makes you look like a little bitch. It really does. You know why? Because of that old line in the rap song. I forget the rap song, but it's from the movie Office Space. You guys remember it. Real gangsta-ass niggas don't flex nuts, because real gangsta-ass niggas know they got them. This is the opposite. This is, I'm flexing nuts! You see? I'm so strong, right? I'm so good at everything. See? I wrestled a bear. Wrestled a bear. Now, again, to all rational people, we roll our eyes. And we look at you as less of a person, not more of a person. But then there's the flip side of this. So to all irrational people, they eat this up. You think that Russian nationalists don't buy into this bullshit? No, they do. They view him as a demigod. They absolutely do, I guarantee you. You might say, Kyle, it's nonsense. No, it's true. They absolutely eat this up. Guys, Fox News, to one degree or another, ate this up. There was a brief period where they were in love with Vladimir Putin because Putin was saying things that were pro-Christian and Obama was standing up for secularism. So they rushed to blow Vladimir Putin. And Bill O'Reilly did it on his show. He put up a picture, or it might have been Hannity, put up a picture of Putin riding a horse with his shirt off in the most goofy propaganda nonsense picture ever. And then next to it was a picture of Obama riding a bike. And the argument they were making was, look at the Russian leader, a strong man, a strapping man, who really knows how to be a leader and a fighter. And Obama, look at this little bitch riding a bicycle. I mean, little pussy liberal prick. He's ineffectual. Look at him. Little weakling. That was what they were getting at. But they really believed it. They believed it. They believed it, man. Again, you might say, Kyle, that's not true. It is true. They believed it. Go back and look at the tapes. I remember on another Fox News show, they were ranting about how in the middle of Netanyahu bombing the shit out of civilians in Gaza, one of the people on the Fox show, said, if we could only get rid of Obama and have Netanyahu or Putin be our president. Unbelievable comment. Again, in the middle of Netanyahu bombing civilians, that made them like him. They were like, oh, so strong. Such a strong leader blowing up babies. It's great. They view this, a hockey star. He's good at everything. He rides a horse. He swims in cold rivers. What a man. What the fuck does that have to do with tax policy? What does that have to do with foreign policy? What does that have to do with trying to get people in who are poor in Russia more material well-being and make them live happy lives? It's got nothing to do with that. It's not about that. It's all about bullshit image. And rational people will take away the opposite from this, and they'll think, what a pathetic loser. But irrational people will eat this up, and they'll think, yes, strong leader, which is also ironic because conservatives pretend to love small government, but in reality, they love authoritarian leaders. So they want to bow down and worship the leader, but the leader needs to be comical like Putin, where he's good at everything, so worship me. Oh, yes, I'll worship you, strong Russian leader, because I'm a little bitch. All right, I'm out of time, guys. I'm out of time for the week. I love you. I'll see you all on Monday. Peace.